because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward. Together, that's exactly where we're going to go.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye, this week in review in the Capitol. Well, okay, J.R., so we go all of June, everybody marching in place on the budget, impasse, logjam, and then suddenly they decide, let's pass a budget. So within 48 hours, there's a budget, and on Governor Scott Walker's desk, and the vote in the Senate, 1815, 5246 in the Assembly, just by the numbers, it spends all funds, $72.6 billion, up 2.3. I'm being, you know, an anal geek here. The state tax funds, $32.9 billion over 2 years, a 5.9% increase. But you and I have seen a lot of budgets. This one seemed a little uglier than others.
Sausage making is never pretty than capital, that's right, for sure. Right. But what's unusual was the amount of tension between Republicans, because they run the show, and so it's different from like when you have Republicans in the Assembly, for example, and Democrats in the Senate years ago. They're in charge of everything. You expect them to get along, but it showed you the competing interests a little bit, if you will.
Yeah.
There's Walker, who's being influenced by his presidential ambitions to a lot of people. I mean, he may say he's not, but that's perception, at least. You have Fitzgerald and Voss at odds. You know, they've often, you know, clashed, if you will, over the budget, but this one was a little bit different because their caucuses were less respectful, if you will, of each other. And you had this new breed of lawmaker coming in, very conservative in those caucuses, who really wanted to go all out and were less tolerant, if you will, of the process. Very different feel, if you will, in the building that has been years past.
10 days ago, Speaker Voss said the Assembly goes first and we're going to vote on prevailing wage first. Senate goes first, folds in the prevailing wage. What happened to that deal announced 10 days ago?
Well, if you ask Robin Voss, it's because Frank LaSalle wanted to go to Mexico.
Well, that's true. That's true. He put his finger in Frank's eye.
I mean, the bottom line, though, is they had the votes to go.
Okay.
And the path that Fitzgerald found was in some ways so smart, you're like, why didn't they think about it months ago? But what they did was use a different group of 17 on these two passages. Well, 17 and 18.
Right.
Fitzgerald knew, I can't get a budget done without Nass, LaSalle, and Strobel.
Yes.
So how do I get those guys on board? And, you know, possibly Vukmir and others, let's be honest. How do I get those guys on board? I got to get prevailing wage in. Well, how do I get prevailing wage in? Well, like, Gudex and Markline aren't going to be there for me in prevailing wage. Aha. I can add an amendment to the budget, letting Markline and Gudex off.
Yep.
Get it in, which then gives those guys also cover of, hey, I voted against it, but now it's in the budget. I liked A, B, and C so much, I accepted Y, and away we go. And then you only lose one with Rob Coles on the final passage, which in some ways is a good thing because there's no deciding vote, if you will, for the budget for campaign ads. So whoever, if it was Gudex or Varela, stuck on the budget even though they didn't like some things, they may have saved their colleagues a little bit of that grief, if you will.
Yeah.
But they found a path. I mean,
they
2 weeks ago, we had no idea where's
the path.
Fitzgerald
found a path. Yes.
Well, I think too his caucus did. I mean, I think those conservatives, those really hardcore pro-appeal people, kind of laid down a gauntlet of, we want this done, we're going to get it done. And Fitzgerald figured, okay, the caucus is going this way. How do I get the rest of these cats herded in that same direction? They found a way to do it.
He told Charlie Sykes that was a matter of threading the needle.
Yeah.
We heard hours of rhetoric, but let's pick, you know, maybe a minute and 45 seconds. Let's hear State Senator Dave Hansen about why the budget is the worst ever, and let's hear John Nygren, co-chair of finance, on why it's a best possible budget.
And your $250 million cut to your universities will cost jobs, not just among the faculty and staff who will be forced to leave, but the loss of research that serves to grow our economy. The cuts and delays you're forcing on our highway program will cost over 1,000 good-paying, family-supporting construction jobs. And your changes, as we had very little time to discuss it, to long-term care opens the door to end family care, to end IRIS, and other assistance to seniors and disabled citizens, and allow an out-of-state, for-profit insurance company to take it over. So vote against this budget. It is taking us backwards. Our progressive tradition of being forward is not happening. We can do much better.
This budget is representative of the people of the state of Wisconsin. As has been said, it doesn't raise taxes. Actually, property taxes are going to continue to go down in the state. We are making education stronger. The results are showing it. But we're doing it in a way that we're living within the taxpayers' means. You have been critical about where we are as far as bonding in transportation. You could be critical, but at the same time, there have basically been no alternatives that came out of the Joint Finance Committee from the Democrat side either. So at the end of the day, from an education standpoint, from a transportation standpoint, from a bonding standpoint, from a taxpayer standpoint, I do believe this is a budget that the people of the state of Wisconsin can be supportive of, and that my colleagues on both sides of the aisle should support.
Okay, now, JR, the budget is hundreds of pages. Let's just talk about 10 major provisions. So as I list them, jump in whenever you want, okay? First, as Nygren just said, there's no increase in income or sales taxes. Sure, we reduce the marriage penalty some, but that's kind of around the edges.
Down payment on the AMT.
Yeah.
That kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah. Cuts two-year state aid to the UW system by $250 million. Remember, the governor recommended $300 million.
But
so
full,
they, so
but
they said this is a victory.
Yeah, with full authority to offset the cut.
Thank you.
They gave him some flexibility, but not as much as the governor wanted. So there is some room, if you will, to breathe and kind of make this thing work. But still, you know, UW-Madison talking about a big cut, $59 million to them alone.
For the UW-Madison.
Because they're the flagship, they have the best ability to raise tuition on the non-freeze areas, if you will. They have more flexibility in that regard to raise more money.
Also took tenure out of the statutes and left it up to regents. That's
which the regents for now are on board, but when regents become more and more walkerish, will they still do that?
Yep. It expands the voucher program to let more K-12 students attend private schools. Boy, that's always contentious. But the firewalls, first of all, they'll only pay now if you transfer from a public school to a private school.
Big embarrassment last time when the most of the kids were going from private school to...
Right. And also, no public district can lose more than 1% of its students. Now, the wild card that I didn't see coming, that Joint Finance added, gives Milwaukee County Executive Chris Abley oversight over up to three failing MPS schools. Wow.
We have seen for several years now Republicans from suburban areas of Milwaukee saying it's not working in Milwaukee. They don't have faith in the school board. Now, Republicans believe in local control to a point, it seems like these days. They don't have faith in the school board. They've seen number of superintendents come and go. They want something different, so they're stepping in basically and trying to give a new avenue, if you will, to improve these schools. Now, if you're in Milwaukee, you hate this because you have people, A, who are not from Milwaukee, dictating to you how to run your schools and giving this county exec broad authority over the failing ones.
But you and I have been covering plans to fix MPS for decades. Remember, Tommy wanted to break it up, but that's a different
show. Jim Doyle wanted to do a little takeover, too?
Yeah.
That was a big issue.
Yeah.
Geez, it was 2009 that was going on. So it's not the first time that something like this has been thought out.
Right. Transportation. There's no increase in the gas tax, no increase in the $75 vehicle registration fee, even though many of those rank-and-file Republicans wanted that, but Walker drew a line, said, it ain't happening.
And I think it's more, in the assembly, there's more appetite, if you will, for a hike, and more if you're from western and southwestern Wisconsin, northern Wisconsin, because you're looking at this going, okay, we're going to finish the core of the zoo.
Yeah.
Delay the north leg,
yep.
But oh, by the way, there's I-94 east-west, I-94 north-south, 894. Once they're done with those mega projects out through Wisconsin, what's going to happen? Republicans are going to say, hey, we don't like the bonding anymore, and we're going to get stuck with this bill out state where we don't have our projects covered. So they're kind of going, I don't like this, makes me
nervous. Well, let's talk about bonding, and that's let's go back to our list. In February, the governor said, let's borrow, let's bond $1.3 billion. Boy, that lit them up. They couldn't stomach that because 2 years out, almost one in four of every dollar is you're going to do nothing but debt service. So they said, borrow $500 million for highways, which will delay highway projects statewide. You heard Senator Hansen, 1,000 jobs?
Yeah.
Then this curious provision, oh yeah, we will give Joint Finance Authority to issue an additional $350 million in bonds, and that amounts to politicians' oversight of the next generation of road building.
There's that, and do you want to put a bet on the table right now they won't let that $350 out the door? I wouldn't take that bet, would you? I bet they spend the money.
Yes, they do.
So
legislators love roads.
Yes. Problem is we go from one of every four almost dollars of debt to one out of every five.
Yes.
There's still a long-term problem. It's going to be addressed either through a reduction in projects, an increase in the gas tax, an increase in registration fees, a combination of those and other avenues, or the T word, tolling. Now, there is a high hurdle to climb with that because federal law says right now you can't do tolling unless you're doing new lanes. How do they thread that needle? if you will, to make that work. But that's something that Robin Voss has talked about and has for a while.
What about this provision, which is back on our list? You must have a clean drug test to qualify for jobless benefits and other public benefits. Is this going to take a waiver from the federal government?
Yes, they have an issue there to get that done. There also possibly have challenges constitutionally to it.
Yeah.
But it is a great talking point for Scott Walker on the campaign trail and Republican primary saying, look what I'm doing in blue Wisconsin, that we are cleaning up. We're doing a hand up, not a handout. That's one of his favorite lines.
Yep.
Talking about these programs of, I don't know anybody that I grew up with who said I want to grow up being addicted to government or dependent upon government. This is part of his presidential message, if you will.
Yep. And you mentioned the compromise on prevailing wage, which says you don't have to pay it on local government projects. And go back to the governor in his message today, his weekly message. By the way, the reporters are not focusing on the fact that this budget continues to freeze property tax on that median valued home.
Yes.
And anything?
Another presidential campaign talking point. I mean, yeah. I can't remember the last speech I heard from Governor Walker, which he did not mention that when I took that property tax will be lower in 16 than were when I took office in 2010.
Right. Anything you want to add that I missed?
Oh,
okay.
Pages and pages and pages.
Pages and pages.
It's a short show, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Good point. Okay. Do you and I agree that the governor signs this budget and announces any vetoes this weekend prior to Monday, which we'll get to in a minute?
It absolutely gets him in under his old promise of, I will wait till this budget is done before I make my announcement. They kind of saved his goose in a little bit because he had made plans for the 13th. I was going through with it, and they found a way to get this budget done, which gives him just enough time to sign that thing, get the vetoes out, and have it clear off his deck before he announces for president.
Well, okay. What are you hearing about potential vetoes? This dramatic expansion of payday lending?
Good question.
You and I can go to a payday lending and buy an annuity? Excuse me?
Well, the things that he really had problems with before, like bail bonds, they didn't bring those back.
Right.
And what I've kind of heard is that the governor wasn't really giving a lot of veto promises, if you will, to lawmakers before. So there's a little bit of a question there, if you will, what he may dig into this time around because it's different. They were a little less, I don't want to say engaged, but a little less kind of, I don't want to get in the middle of this mess, if you will, mm-hmm. on the 999 motion.
Yes.
Kind of hanging back some more.
Yep. What are you hearing on Enbridge, excuse me? They're telling Dane County, mm-hmm. you cannot make this major utility Enbridge buy more insurance than they already carry.
Again, local control to a point. Republicans kind of picked on Dane County a bit in this budget. It's not the only provision they went after him on. But this one says essentially, because there's a big fight right now, the Dane County Board looked at ways to try and kind of slow down, delay, stop, whatever you want to call it,
yeah.
the project. And they're saying, no, we're going to undercut your authority, if you will.
And every other county in Wisconsin has pretty much said, okay, Enbridge, come through us. But Dane is a big sticking point. So they loaded this provision in the budget.
Look at Milwaukee County, too. Now, they took it out in the technical amendment, I think, technical amendment on Tuesday in the Senate. But there were provisions in that budget after joint finance got done with it that would tell the Milwaukee County, board, you have no more authority over contracting, appropriate. This is all the county executive. He has all this power now, and you're shut out. They also, at one time in the budget, had basically shut the board out of sales of things like O'Donnell Park, the mm-hmm. parking structure,
mm-hmm.
Shut them out of that. They let back in a little bit on O'Donnell, but they really, at one point, are going after the county board of Milwaukee as well, which is, you know, like the Dane County Board, dominated by Democrats who have a different agenda than Republicans statewide.
Okay, new topic. We've been talking about it for months. It's going to be official. Walker's going to announce for president, mm-hmm. 5 o'clock, Waukesha County Expo on Monday. You're going to be in the first or second row.
I'm going to be watching on TV while somebody else is there.
You're going to be watching on TV. why Monday, July 13th?
Good question, but Expo Center makes all kinds of sense. It's where he was the night of the recall election 2012.
Yeah.
That's what launched him in the national conversation.
Okay.
It is a good symbolic launching pad for him back. Look at the video we put out this week, Recall the Recall. All about, I mean, basically that is like kind of like one of the foundations of his campaign, if you will, of I beat back this attempt and I fought the unions.
Okay. What are you going to look for? Any new major campaign themes that he's going to drive in the ground? Any new drama? Any emotion? What?
Oh, the emotion is going to be about the recall. I mean, that's, I would guess that the recall will be a big part of this, about the fight that he's had, the stances he's taken. He's a straight shooter, if you will. You know, those are the things he's been talking about for a while. We have not really seen a new Scott Walker in terms of, like, the things he stresses. We've seen some nuanced positions mm-hmm. that have shifted a bit in the last couple of months. But I would expect you're going to see the Scott Walker that we all know it have.
Well, how's he been doing in the polls lately and the national buzz prior to his announcement?
Well, the big shock has been Donald Trump now is like...
Is he leading in South Carolina?
He's like number one with a bullet in some place. North Carolina was maybe?
Okay, North Carolina.
One of the Carolinas. But anyway, I mean, is it just a bump from the announcement, you know, or is there really a thirst for Donald Trump? That's an excellent question. I don't know if I can wrap my head around right now.
Yeah. Let's not go too deep into that, man.
No.
We'll have to reach for some aspirin. Okay, new topic. These proposed changes in the open records law. You and I have seen budget. Mm-hmm. We've been covering this place for a total of more than 40 years.
No, geez.
Sorry. Have you ever seen a bigger surprise in terms of rewriting the open records law than that which came?
I heard some rumblings on Thursday before finance went in that they were going to touch the open records law. I had not expected the breadth of the changes. And really, in some ways, the lack of foresight of this is going to cause a problem. Like, I could have understood, you know, talking about the points that Fitzgerald was making this week of, for example, if you're a constituent who has a personal issue coming to your lawmaker about, should your name be public record? That's something you could really address.
That's debatable.
You can make a good argument about that.
Employ the balancing test.
But to essentially shut off all of your records, all of your communications, I mean, deliver a process, what's that cover exactly? The new privilege? I mean, this is a sweeping change, the open records law they propose. How can you not see the blowback coming?
I want to come back to what you said. It is astonishing to me that amendment, which only had a lifespan of 48 hours, mm-hmm. would have established and declared that their legislators have an absolute privilege to keep all this stuff secret. The scope of this stuff, communications and interactions with current and past staffers, mm-hmm. advice they get from legislative lawyers on whether something is constitutional, who asked for something, who interacts with the constituents, sweeping, and all this is secret. And it would have, of course, helped the Walker administration, yeah. which is being sued over their decisions leading up to the UW system funding.
Now, you can, and talking to some couple of people who've been in government, they will tell you that they would like to have the opportunity, if you will, to discuss with their bosses policy. What should we do going forward? Can we have an open conversation on email? I mean, Gordon Hintz, Democrat from Oshkosh, walked by the table at finance last Thursday night, goes, oops, don't delete my emails anymore, kind of joking with us about, you know, this
right,
process.
Because they're secret. Yeah.
Yeah. But if this had come to pass, you would have shut all that off. And so I get the argument from some people in government of we should be able to have a real conversation if we, without, like, pretending.
Right.
Kind of thing, but to not really kind of grasp, you need to kind of air this out, if you will, and that the blowback you'd have gotten, that was a little surprising. I think that was, you get caught up sometimes in government of, oh, this will work. It's not going to be that big a deal. And this one, they really kind of misguided it. Misjudged, if you will.
I want the timeline on this I find just fascinating because at 5 o'clock on July 2nd, it's part of a 67-item, 24-page wrap-up motion. Mm-hmm. That's 5 p.m. Then at midnight, they adopt it. All 12 Republicans on Joint Finance vote for it. Then, 9:45 a.m. on July 4th, before he walks in a parade in Tulsa, the governor tells reporters he'll work on changes. That's 9:45, mm-hmm. because I had Mary Spicuzza check the time. And then at 5 p.m., 2 days after it's announced, on the 4th of July, fireworks and, oh, here's this statement. We're going to yank this thing out entirely.
Oh, I walked in from doing yard work and just happened to see my phone with the email saying we're pulling it out.
Okay.
Amazing speed.
Amazing speed. And then Tuesday, of course, the Senate did just that, mm-hmm. yanked it out 32-0 unanimously.
I don't think, though, that vote to pull it out gives you real cover. I mean, even if you're not on finance, so those 6 members on finance from both houses, of 12 Republicans total, they're going to take grief, even though they pulled it out. I know that they wrote the amendment to pull it out as a way to kind of give them some cover. Dale Koyanga said, I'm sorry, they made a mistake. Howard Markline kind of backed away from this immediately and took some ownership of the amendment to pull it out. I don't get the impression, talking to folks, that really gives you cover because you voted for this. Even if you say, I voted for it because I liked A, B, and C in the budget or in this document otherwise,
right.
You still voted for this. If you are in a even remotely competitive district, you're going to have ads run against you saying you try to shut out government or shut out the public from the government. Even if you're not on finance, I think there is, talking to people again, a bridge you can make that they Republicans, all Republicans, are muddied up by this because they're part of the caucus that try to do it.
Yeah.
You can make an argument that you could see an ad in swing districts next year of their colleagues, their party, try to shut the public out from government Wisconsin, and it could be ugly.
The reason that I think an ad like that might be effective is Nygren says this is an issue that just us reporters care about. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, but you and I heard from regular people in that 48-hour window, they did what?
Yeah.
Yeah, they were just really angry, and it went beyond the Capitol Press Corps.
Yes. Now, trying to be as objective as possible, because this is part of how I do my job as the open records law, people were concerned. People did, I mean, I do radio talk shows. This struck from left to right. Mm-hmm. Conservatives were just as unhappy as liberals.
MacIver didn't like it. Charlie Sykes didn't like it. Yeah.
I mean, John Erpenbach, who went to court to try and prevent the release of some records because MacIver wanted personal information of his constituents who contacted him over Act 10. Erpenbach joked, when I and MacIver are together on something, you know there's something going on.
Right.
That there is it's a suggestion, if you will, of how unpopular this is. Charlie Sykes was talking about what a bad idea this is, right? Wisconsin, MacIver,
yep.
One Wisconsin Now. I mean, it was everybody was saying, what are you guys doing?
All right, well, final question on this issue. Are you surprised that the GOP leaders who have risen to the top of their party, Governor Walker, Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald, Speaker Voss, Senator Darling, Representative Nygren, could misjudge public opinion this badly?
You know, it's been a long, hard summer. I mean, I'm trying to give the benefit of the doubt of what might have gone into it, but no, it's a hard one to see how you don't see this coming. And oh, by the way, they're talking about coming back in this fall and doing a alleged counsel study and looking at changes. As one Republican told me, they have poisoned the well at this point. Any change you try to make is going to be viewed through the prism of what happened this summer with this provision, the budget.
Yep.
I don't know they can create an atmosphere, if you will, that would be conducive to conversation about personal information about constituents contacting you. Can you make that case? Sure you can, but in this environment, I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, because it's a matter of important policy, I want to land just for a minute. The Assembly also sent the governor, since it was passed by the Senate earlier, the ban on abortions after 20 weeks. Governor Walker said, I'm going to sign this. He may sign this also as quickly as he can before his Monday presidential announcement.
What
right?
He called for the bill back in March. Remember, last fall, when Governor Walker was running for governor, he talked to this ad that was very effective at the time, talking about this bill he'd signed that require an ultrasound before an abortion mm-hmm. and many privileges for any clinic performing one. He couched it as, I know it's a difficult decision. The bill that I signed leaves it up to a woman or a doctor. Very effective ad at the time. That ad, though, doesn't play well in places like Iowa with evangelical voters who want something pure on the issue. He took some grief after an interview on Fox News in March. Like 2 days later, issued a letter saying, I will vote for a 20-week abortion ban when it reaches my desk. Now, Governor Walker does not do that. He always says, even things he wants, I'll review it when it comes to my desk.
Yeah.
This is one of the rare times I've seen him say, I will sign it when it comes. Sight unseen, I will sign it when it comes.
Right.
This bill is interesting because it flew through the Senate and the Assembly without an amendment for rape or incest. Mm-hmm. Now, the proponents of the bill will tell you those decisions are made right away. We're talking 20 weeks, about 5 months into a pregnancy. You don't wait that long if you are a victim of rape or incest to have an abortion. Even so, the politics of that issue is such that you can make a very effective ad that says they're trying to force rape and incest victims to carry a pregnancy to term. It is a touchy issue. And now, at the same time, backers will tell you, look at the polls about abortion for 20 weeks. The public, generally speaking, is okay with a ban after that point, but it's that the exception part that's not there, and that could be an issue for him.
So if he signs it before his Monday announcement and then hits the road and he goes to Las Vegas, mm-hmm. South Carolina, New Hampshire, then 3 days, the Winnebago tour, we can expect him to use this in those states.
Absolutely, and it's going to play well in Iowa. I mean, the governor has basically gone all in on Iowa.
Yes.
He needs to do well in Iowa.
Yep.
This will play well there. The primary voters here are whiter, more evangelical, more conservative, and on the line than the average, general electorate voter, but they are his target audience right now with some of this stuff.
Okay, let's talk about the biggest issue, unfinished business. The $500 million plan for a new Bucks arena. Mm-hmm. Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald, told Charlie Sykes, I need Democratic votes. I don't know how many votes there are. There may have to be a ticket surcharge. That's kind of Democratic Senator Tim Carpenter's bottom line. He also said there could be a vote next week. Are you hearing that there will be a Senate vote? Because remember, Assembly Speaker Voss says, we have the votes in the Assembly. Whether or not the Bucks deal goes is up to the Senate.
Well, there's a caveat now. Jim Steinke majority saying we need about 15 votes in the Assembly to pass the bill.
15 Ds?
Yes. Now, he told me that they haven't done a nose count, but that's a good target, if you will, for Democrats to come up with.
And 35 R's, 15 D's?
Yeah, gets you to 50.
Yeah.
Now, again, no nose count, but he's kind of thumbnailing, if you will. What's interesting is the Senate has to go first on this again and get this thing done. How do they find the votes to do it? Fitz has kind of noted, at least felt out the other side, can you guys meet by Wednesday to do this, or Wednesday of next week to do this?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting date, July 17th. Today, Paul Farrow resigns. We focus full-time being Waukesha County Executive.
Yes.
We assume he'll be a yes vote. Chris Cappinga, we expect to win the general the special election July 21st to fill that seat. We believe he's a likely no vote.
Yep.
It's a harder lift to need four or five versus three or four. And so the fast thing, if they get it done next week, it makes life a lot easier for Scott Fitzgerald.
Meanwhile, the president of the Bucks sat there and told Joint Finance, it's very simple. If we don't get a new arena, wave goodbye to the Bucks. They're going to Seattle or Las Vegas.
Well, we've known that for months. That's been clear. The NBA has a deal put in place in the purchase that they did, whatever it was, that if you can't get an arena by 2017, they'll buy back the team, give you $25 million profit, and move it somewhere else. And Seattle and Las Vegas, the place they've been talking about for months. That is obvious. They will go without the financing for this.
About to put the Bucks Arena, on the top of my agenda for the fall session. Are you there yet, or do you think there are going to be votes next week?
The Senate could go next week. It's like with prevailing wage. When Fitz has a vote, he'll go to the floor. Once he gets the votes, I don't know for sure. Can he cobble it together in the next several days? Maybe. He's pulled a rabbit out of the hat before with this kind of stuff. So,
yeah, he has.
You know, maybe he could.
He's pulled a lot of rabbits out of the hat, which I think we're going to get to in a little bit.
I don't know if the Assembly will rush back to take this up. For one thing, hey, it's the middle of July. They want to go home.
Yeah.
They want to get out of here and take a break.
They really do.
The Capitol needs to be aired out, if you will, right now. There's a certain level of distrust.
Animus.
Unhappiness in that building. They all need to get away. Like, I mean, I got a family of five kids. We do great for 3 days. The fourth day is always rough.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Get back away from each other. You miss each other after a while and come back together. That'll be good for them. But they need to get away for a while, so I don't think they'll pass it right now.
Okay, one more subject before we get to the stock report. This new federal court lawsuit that is aimed at overturning the congressional, the U.S. House, the Senate, and the assembly lines that have now been used for two elections. Is that a Hail Mary pass, or should we watch that seriously in light of the recent U.S. Supreme Court decision?
Well, I'm not a lawyer, but from what I've been told, partisan advantage is not a reason to throw out a map. I mean, that's what redistricting is about. Let's be absolutely honest. If Democrats had been in control in 2011, they would have done the exact same thing Republicans did.
Yeah.
Maximize their product,
sure.
You know, their opportunity for seats. That's what you do. It makes total sense. Republicans, same thing. It's already survived a lawsuit one time. Again, not being a lawyer, I don't rule anything out, but I would suggest that considering that we know about what the court standard is, it's not the best bet to overturn the maps in Wisconsin.
Okay, finally. Okay, now, WisPolitics stock report, rising.
So, Scott Fitzgerald?
Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest.
You're right.
A couple of years ago, the perception was what? The Assembly leads, and the Senate is where conservative ideas go to die.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, the Senate is leading, and its conservative wing is leading the Senate, and Scott Fitzgerald is riding this wave, if you will, of right to work, prevailing wage, he got a budget done.
He passed the abortion ban first, yes.
Yeah, it's a fairly decent list of conservative things. Now, one caveat to all that is Fitz did step in with the open record stuff. There is a question of if the pendulum is swinging too far to the right, if you will, what they're doing lately, might that sometime lead to a pushback and they lose some seats? We'll see. But for right now, he's the hero of conservative media for what he's been doing. And that is a big audience for those guys right now. They're giving a lot of love. That deal with the budget to get that and the prevailing wage was extremely smart. Now, whether it was Fitz's idea or if he got courage for his members, either way, he gets the credit for it. All in all, I mean, you got to give the guy credit. He's found a way to lead a caucus that can be difficult and has competing wings and get him moving in the right direction. Now, some Democrats will say it's not really leading the caucus. He figures out which way they're going and herds the other cats with it. But for what he's got to work with, he's done all right.
I agree. I like what he told Charlie Sykes. He has been threading the needle. Okay, yeah. Mixed.
So Rick Gudeck.
Okay, now here's a guy finishing his first term. He won by 600 votes
in
2012.
Yep, big union district. Number of contractors of that district, a number of hard hats in that district. If they weren't gone after right to work, they are probably gone now after prevailing wage. That could be an issue for him. Now, 600 votes is a difficult, that's not a huge margin. It's going to be a swing seat again next fall. One argument I've heard from people is that, look, yes, he might lose some hard hat guys. They're probably gone. But because he's taking these votes, could he possibly bump up the base and have the base come back and save him? Say, hey, this guy took some tough votes. He helped us out. Let's go out and help the guy. There's that opportunity. The vote against prevailing wage via amendment, but for the budget that included it, the perception is that was done to give him some cover. I don't know you can really make the argument to the average voter. They're going to say, okay, wait a second. You voted for the budget with it in there, but you say you don't support it. How does that work?
Yeah.
One other thing, if Gudeck had concerns about the budget with it in there, he did Fitz a favor by being the 18th vote, if you will, on that budget, prevent it from being anybody being the deciding vote. He's got a lot at stake. I mean, there are a number of lawmakers in the assembly as well that vote could hurt them or that issue could hurt them next fall, but Gudeck probably has the most at stake of anybody right now.
That's a good choice. Falling.
The Bucks. Now, this
they just
could all
missed
change.
That free throw? Okay.
This could all change in a week. You know, if things go well next week, maybe their fortunes are back on track. But when you start the week with Lena Taylor, who you need, ripping, and I mean ripping to shreds,
yes,
the deal put together and saying, how can you not have the Senate District here to testify? How can you issue bonds that aren't paid off? There's been a single payment for 13 years. Her words were, who does that? You wouldn't do that. Why are you asking basically my constituents to pay off these taxes by doing that? That is not a good sign. Peter Fay goes in and says, we can't do a ticket tax. It'll drop attendance at games. Lawmakers are going, wait a second, come on. $3 a ticket's going to really deter people from going to a Bucks game. So there's that issue. I get the impression that they'll still get it done somehow. But to get it done, you need Democratic votes. To get them, you need a change. The ticket tax is the most obvious change to make to win them over and get them on board. Can you thread that needle again, Fitzgerald?
Right.
Now, look at the Milwaukee delegation. Yeah, Lena Taylor has ripped it. Tim Carper is running for city council and saying, I don't like this. I'm going to offer an amendment to add a ticket surcharge, and I believe also a luxury suites, subject to the sales tax, something like that. Those are two votes you kind of need. We think Chris Larson will be there.
Yes.
We think Nikia Harris-Dodd will be there.
Yes.
You need a couple more. And oh, by the way, here's a little bit of an interesting thing for you. If you're Jennifer Schilling, minority leader in the Senate, do you want to be the vote that saves Scott Walker's hide on the Bucks? Because if the Bucks leave, there'll be all kinds of finger pointing. You know, it's your fault, the Republicans, because you run everything. It's your fault, Democrats, because this is your city and you couldn't find the votes. But Scott Walker put them in this box, if you will, back in February by introducing this as part of his budget.
Well, those people that want Jennifer Schilling, put her at the top of the list to run for governor in 2018. Mm-hmm. Can you see her voting for that as a potential
That's
candidate?
A tough choice for her of supporting her Milwaukee delegation, but by doing that, saving Republicans and Scott Walker. That's why I'll be fascinated to see how many votes they have Republicans for that package and how many Dems they need. Because if you're outstate, I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat,
it's unpopular.
What's your motivation? And two, you recall in 2010, Dems got nailed for supporting $5 million for a scoreboard in the Bucks Stadium. Imagine $250 million, granted, most of it from Milwaukee County, but from the various, you know, entities.
$55 million state and the rest from locals.
But $250 million for the Bucks, and you cut UW $250.
Yeah.
Schools are basically treading water. You know, that's a hard argument to make, if you will. Now, if you have 5 minutes, it's easy to make that argument. But if you don't have 5 minutes, and let's face it, TV ads are not 5 minutes. It can be a tough choice. So, I mean, she's in a spot, too, and the Bucks need a little bit of work right now.
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, that's great. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And that's Rewind for this week.